This past Sunday, the featured speaker was Buzz, the giant talking bumblebee. Buzz is actually a large puppet handled by ventriloquist Hannah Laskowski. The performance was the latest in a series of talks about pollinators you may want to be on hand for at the University of Illinois on Sunday afternoons this summer. The talks are designed to be educational and fun. May Barenbaum heads the Department of Entomology at the U of I. She's also ventriloquist Hannah Laskowski's mom. May joins me this afternoon on the telephone to talk about the next couple of events in the Sunday series. May, how are you?
Oh, just fine. Thanks so much for
sure.
giving me an opportunity to promote pollinators.
Okay, we want the very latest buzz.
Well,
yeah, tell us first a little bit about Sunday's presentation. I couldn't be there, but I wanted to be there.
Well, as you mentioned, I happen to know a ventriloquist who is among very few with insect puppets. This week actually is the International Venthaven Ventriloquism Convention, which is largest ventriloquial gathering in the world, actually. And so we know a lot about what insect puppets are extremely rare. They were popular a while back when one of the library reading programs was Catch the Reading Bug. You see this tendency toward puns here. But Hannah has both a bee puppet and a cockroach puppet and some insights into insect biology that set her apart among ventriloquists, I think.
Yeah, okay.
I may be partially responsible for those insights.
I think you had something to do with that. Well, what's coming up this Sunday?
This Sunday is the 18th. We have if you go to the webpage, actually, we have the Planetarium webpage, we have a list of upcoming talks. And this Sunday, the title is actually incorrect. What we're going to have this Sunday is at 2 o'clock. Tanya Jogesh is a graduate student at University of Illinois, and she's going to be giving a talk on how scientists study pollination. It's not as straightforward and easy as you might think. It's really quite an incredibly complex and involved ecological process. It's ironic that people think of the birds and the bees as a really simple way of explaining sexual reproduction to kids, whereas in reality, it's very complicated. And I would venture to guess most people know a lot more about human reproduction than they do about how plants reproduce. So.
Yeah. Well, why is the study of pollination important?
Well, without pollination, the world would be a pretty grim place. About 3/4 of all the flowering plants, that's about 200,000 species of flowering plants around the world, depend on animal partners or pollinators in order to reproduce. The reason for that is, you know, plants are rooted in the ground and can't exactly get up and walk around and try to meet a prospective mate. So they send their sex cells out into the environment on the backs or wings or feathers or fur or hair of animal partners in exchange for usually some sort of tangible reward like nectar or pollen.
Yeah. So it's a beneficial relationship.
It's a mutualism, exactly.
Yeah.
The plants get transportation in exchange for to offering this usually a food reward. Now, some plants are a little tricky about that. That's really an interesting process. Some plants practice deceit and just attract a pollinator and then not reward them. In fact, probably the most egregious example of this is a species of orchid that resembles a female wasp and even, in fact, produces the same chemical signal or pheromone that the female wasp releases. So when male wasps who come out a couple of days earlier than the females go out in search of a mate, they find these flowers, attempt to copulate with them, get covered with pollen, and filled with frustration and move on to the next plant where this whole process gets repeated. So they really get, as far as we know, nothing out of this whole interaction with flowers. But the plant does get pollinated.
Yeah, well, ahead of talking with you this afternoon, I went online and I found a fascinating article about a plant pollinator relationship. This involves figs and wasps.
Ah, yes.
And here's the lead. Figs and the wasps that pollinate them present one of biologists' favorite examples of a beneficial relationship between two different species. In exchange for the pollination service provided by the wasp, the fig fruit provides room and board for the wasps developing young. However, wasps don't always pollinate the fig, and if that happens, fig trees punish the cheaters by dropping unpollinated fruit.
Yeah, it's a dogwood-eat-dogwood world out there. In fact, mentioning fig wasps, you know, California is, I think, second only to Turkey in fig production, yet figs could not be grown commercially in California until fig wasps were imported. Every species of fig tree requires a different species of wasp. And back in the late 19th century, they had no idea that they even needed wasps. And in fact, those dropping figs, people didn't even bring over the special figs that fig trees produce in order to raise the young of the fig wasp. Mm. So they couldn't even grow them. About one-third of our diet comes from pollinators. That's the sort of standard estimate. Depends on how healthy you eat. Most of the healthy parts of our diet, the fruits, nuts, and vegetables, rely on pollinators.
Mm. Let's hear it for pollinators.
Yeah, and, well, you know, thank a pollinator if you had, if you enjoyed your lunch today, probably.
Yeah, that apple, thanks to pollinators.
Yep. And your pear, and the peach, and the almonds, and the all kind. And the list goes on. In fact, it's chocolate. We wouldn't have chocolate without a little tiny midge, a little fly. It's the only known pollinator of Tiburoma cacao, the chocolate tree.
How many pollinating insects are there? And I don't mean all together, I mean different species.
Oh, so there's probably about as many species of insect pollinators, around 200,000, as there are pollinating flowering plants.
Wow.
And there's about 1,000 vertebrates. We don't really, I mean, they're kind of dwarfed by numbers, but they're just as important. There's some plants depend on hummingbirds for pollination. There are Australian plants that depend on a lorikeet type of parrot. There are lots of tropical plants that depend on bats.
Mm-hmm. And that's why the Bacardi people have a bat on the bottle.
Now, you told me something I didn't know. Is there a bat on the Bacardi bottle?
Yeah.
All right. I guess I'm going to have to go buy some Bacardi from them.
Well, let's get back to
the Pollinatarium.
The Pollinatarium.
Yes. So that's the 18th. This Tanya is going to talk about her own project, how wild parsnip plants are pollinated.
Oh, okay. And where is the Pollinatarium?
The Pollinatarium is on South Campus. It's south of Japan House. It's easy. The easiest access is off Windsor Road. So if you're heading east past Lincoln on Windsor, it'll be your next left turn.
Okay. So it's near the Arboretum.
Yes, it's just south of the bulk of the Arboretum. It's sort of a nice position to put the Pollinatarium because it really does link the whole Arboretum, all those plants that require pollinators. And there's just due south of the Pollinatarium is a reconstructed prairie, which now has walking paths, so you can actually see them in action.
Okay. Well, what goes on within the confines of the Pollinatarium?
Well, it's open every Saturday and Sunday from 1 to 4 to anybody. And throughout the week, we arrange for visits from all kinds of groups. We've had Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, we've had preschools, we've had elder care, we've had every second grade class in the Champaign schools came during the last academic year. So we've had beekeeper groups, all kinds of people have come, and they're all welcome, and I hope everybody finds something interesting there.
Okay. And when do these talks take place on Sunday afternoon? What time?
It's 2:00 every Sunday, and you can park right there at the Pollinatarium and go to the website. It's very easy to do a search because it's the only Pollinatarium on the web. We kind of made up the word as sort of a parallel to planetarium. A planetarium is all about the planets, and the Pollinatarium is all about pollinators. So for those who've not seen the word before, which didn't exist, it's Pollinatarium. So Google Pollinatarium and we'll pop up. And on the home page, the bottom of the link is our schedule. And again, the 18th will be Tanya Jogesh. Sabra Mirismali speaking on the 25th about why plants make sense to pollinators, why plants smell the way they do. So he may even bring some samples for sniffing. You know.
Okay. And I have one last question for you in that regard, in that very regard. You know, we know our dogs have a powerful sense of smell, and they're used to sniff out all kinds of contraband. They're used for tracking. How does the sense of smell of a pollinator compare with that of the dog?
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because in Germany, in airports, they're using bees to detect contraband, honeybees. And, in fact, there's Jerry Bromenschenk at University of Montana has long been training bees to detect landmines and other explosives.
Interesting.
They are astonishingly good. I think put dogs to shame, depending on the type of scent. Dogs are a little bit more, Catholic in their ability to detect scents, but because many pollinators are very specialized.
Yeah. Well, how do pollinating insects smell?
Oh, that sounds like a riddle, doesn't it? delightful. In general, you know, insects have this external skeleton, which kind of insulates them from the rest of the environment. So in order to perceive environmental signals, most insects are covered with hairs, little tiny fine hairs called sensory hairs. And these hairs can detect vibration, but many, many, many hairs, thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands of hairs, can, depending on the species, can detect particular odors.
Okay. Well, May, thanks so much for talking with me this
afternoon. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
May Barenbaum heads the Department of Entomology at the University of Illinois. Check out the Pollinatarium online. Just go ahead and Google it. It's the only one in the world.